लाभा
कहें तो 17th चैप्टर 17th वर्स धर्म उवाच एतत् वः पाण्डवेयानां युक्तमार्ताभयं वचः येषां गुणगणैः कृष्णो दौत्यादौ भगवान् कृतः द पर्सनालिटी ऑफ रिलिजन सेड एतत् ऑल दिस वह बयु पांडवेयानां ऑफ दोज हु आर इन द पांडवास डायनास्टी पांडव डायनास्टी युक्तम जस्ट बिफिटिंग आर्त द सफरर अभयम फ्रीडम फ्रॉम ऑल फियर्स वचः स्पीचेस येषां दोज गुणगणैः बाय द क्वालिफिकेशंस कृष्णः इवन लॉर्ड कृष्णा दौत्यादौ द ड्यूटी ऑफ अ मैसेंजर एक्सेट्रा भगवान द पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड कृतः परफॉर्म्ड ट्रांसलेशन परपोज बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस ऐसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद श्रील प्रभुपाद की The personality of religion said, these words just spoken by you befit a person of the Pandava dynasty, captivated by the devotional qualities of the Pandavas. Even Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, performed duties as a messenger. Purport. The assurances and challenges made by Maharaj Parikshit are never exaggerations of his real power. The Maharaj said that even the denizens of heaven could not escape his stringent government if they were violators of religious principles. He was not falsely proud, for a devotee of the Lord is equally as powerful as the Lord, or sometimes more powerful by his grace, and any promise made by a devotee, though it may be ordinarily very difficult to fulfill, is properly executed by the grace of the Lord. The Pandavas, by their unalloyed devotional service and full surrender unto the Lord, made it possible for the Lord to become a chariot driver or sometimes their letter messenger. Such duties executed by the Lord for his devotee are always very pleasing to the Lord, because the Lord wants to render service to his unalloyed devotee, whose life has no other engagement than to serve the Lord with full love and devotion. Maharaj Parikshit, grandson of Arjuna, the celebrated friendly servitor of the Lord, was a pure devotee of the Lord, like his grandfather. And therefore the Lord was always with him, even from the time when he was helplessly lying in the womb of his mother and was attacked by the blazing Brahmastra weapon of Ashwatthama. A devotee is always under the protection of the Lord, and therefore the assurance of protection by Maharaj Parikshit could never be without meaning. The personality of religion accepted this fact and thus thanked the king for his being true to his exalted position. The personality of religion said, these words just spoken by you befit a person of the Pandava dynasty, captivated by the devotional qualities of the Pandavas, even Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, performed duties as a messenger. In the previous verses, Parikshit Maharaj has been making certain statements to Dharma, saying that if the Dharma bull can point out the perpetrator of that sinful activity of beating the cow and the bull, then he would at once be ready to punish the perpetrator. Sometimes when you want to offer a complaint to an authority like an executive head of the state or a king or police, or military people or whatever. Sometimes there is a doubt whether proper action will be taken or not, especially in the modern times. Like if somebody happens to be having some connection to some political party, then you place a complaint to the police. Then even if police is ready to, willing to take action because of that person's connection to the MLA or MP, he goes unpunished. Isn't it? On the contrary, those who made the complaint, they will land in trouble because their family members or their property, their money may be usurped. They can land up in trouble. This is one reason why in the modern times people fear to go for such complaint. Then in front of such political power, then the police, people have no power. Sometimes the police themselves may be corrupt. Leave alone somebody's connection to political power. The police may themselves be sharing part of the bribe, which is stolen by the thieves. So sometimes people lose faith in such kind of rule, that even if some property is stolen, they don't know whether to complain to police, because sometimes police are also thieves in a different uniform. So in this way, to go and offer a complaint, to place a complaint, one needs confidence in the ability of the authority to take a severe action. Only then the complaint will be placed. So in the Vedic times, the kings were very strict with respect to malpractices and behavior. Like you will hear, there was a great king called as Nebuchadnezzar, who had the hanging gardens in Babylon. You will study about him in the history books. He had a principle, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. If somebody breaks somebody's tooth, then that fellow will be called to the court and the other person will be told to break his tooth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That was the principle. Similarly, if somebody would steal someone's property, their hands were cut off. So if somebody is moving around with a cut off hand, everyone will know this fellow must have stolen. And that remains as a symbol, half hand. So anybody would see, they would be reminded that I should not steal. So that was a warning. So these were the kind of rules that were there. If somebody murdered somebody, somebody was given a death sentence, they were not secretly, put in an electric chair in a room and killed. It was not done like that. It was a public display. They were brought to the public. Thousands and thousands of people would be watching them being hung in the public. Why? Because people should know. In fact, a person who is a murderer, he would have to walk through all the public in the aisles with his head hanging down, put down, and he will come to the stage. He will be elevated on a big stage, and there he will be hung, publicly punished. So, such punishments were given, and the kings were bold, and they could catch the culprits, and they could punish them in time. So, people had faith in the king. Here, Maharaj Parikshit is declaring to the Dharma that don't fear that I am a coward or I am weak-hearted, that I will not punish the perpetrator of sin. Because sometimes, when it comes to justice, the king has the right to give forgiveness also. So where to draw the line? Which sin should be forgiven? Which sin should be punished? To what extent one should show compassion? These things become subjective. So then one should refer to the scriptures. Like for example, if a woman commits sin, she is not killed or she is not punished according to scriptures, because women are considered like children. She may be taunted or chastised, but she is not punished. So the scriptures say there are different rules for different people. For children there are different rules. For brahmanas different rules. For shudras different rules. For different types of people. According to their level of development of consciousness and according to their nature and thing, there are different punishments. So a king should be well read in the scriptures, or he should be supported by ministers who will guide him. And what punishment should be given to which person. So we had to draw the line between forgiveness and giving appropriate punishment. Maharaj Parikshit is saying that if a person is deserving punishment, even if that person belongs to the heavenly abode, still I'll be able to punish him. Who can say with such courage? The king's son like that. A practical example is Arjuna punishing the Gandharvas. When at one time, when Duryodhana and others, his brothers and other Kauravas, they knew that the Pandavas are in Kamyakavan, they were performing some yajna sacrifices by the side of some holy river. So Duryodhana came to know that. So he wanted to go to the forest and make a show of how happy I am. So he told Karna and Shakuni. Shakuni said, see, it's a good idea. Only thing is your father may not allow you. And as he appropriately said, when he went and requested Dhritarashtra, can I go to forest? And his father said, no. I know why you want to go. No, don't unnecessarily disturb the Pandavas' minds. Already you have sent them to forest. Now don't go to unnecessarily, create more enmity. Better you remain here. Then Shakuni gave an idea. He told him, tell your father that you have to go and count the cattle. Because that's one of the duties of a king and king's people. You have to go around and count the cattle. You are going for that. So that's what he went and told Dhritarashtra. We are going around. We are counting. Along with that, we are also going to make some pleasure bungalows and stay for some time. So Dhritarashtra again warned him. In the name of going for counting the cattle, don't go through the area where the Pandavas are there. He warned him and sent him. But then, exactly as planned, Duryodhana went and made the pleasure bungalows near the side of the river. Actually, those woods were belonging to the Gandharvas. They were not belonging to the Kauravas. So they were making the bungalows. Some Gandharvas came and stopped them. They said, what are you doing here? This is our area. And Duryodhana was very proud. He said, who cares? Go and complain to your people. I don't care. So he went on building the bungalows. He brought the animals, the horses, elephants, everything. And when they started staying, the Gandharvas came. They came in large numbers, hundreds and thousands of them. They all came with their weapons. They came down from the heavens, from their abodes. And within a very short time, they arrested Duryodhana and all the Kauravas. And there were also women with them, Duryodhana and his women. So in the meantime, some of the Kaurava army men, they crossed the river and went to the other side. They went and reported to Yudhishthira Maharaj. He was at that time sitting in the yajna along with Draupadi and performing the sacrifice. So they said, we need your help. We are in great crisis. Our king is arrested. Duryodhana is arrested now. And all of them are being arrested. And then one word he said, our Kaurava women are going to be mishandled by the Gandharvas. They are going to also take them. And Yudhishthira heard it, immediately stood up. And he called Bhima, he called Arjun. Bhima was very happy. Bhima said, just see. These guys came to show off. Now they learned a good lesson. Admonished him, corrected him and said, no, it's our duty. We are 5 and they are 100. When it comes to a crisis like this, then we are 105. We are together. So he said, you should go and help. Then he sent them. Immediately, Bhima and Arjuna, the order of Yudhishthira, came to the other side. And Arjuna was getting prepared with his bow and arrow. And he gave a loud warning to the Gandharvas. He said, on the order of my brother I have come, and you have no right to touch the Kaurava women. If you don't pay heed to our advice, all your hands, legs, heads, everything will be cut off, cut to pieces. So Arjuna gave a warning. He twanged his bow and gave a warning. The Gandharvas, they thought, this is a human being, what can I do? And we belong to higher abode. And they said, who are we? Do you know? We are Gandharvas. We have come from Gandharva Lok. And they had a Chitrarath king. We have our king. And we only follow his advice. Now you can't do anything. You do whatever you want, they said. And they went on arresting further kings and they started flying up. When they're flying up, Arjuna hit them so that they'll come down. They could not fly up. They could not go. All the chains that they had put, they were all cut into pieces. And all the Kaurava men were relieved, all the women were saved. The Gandharvas were defeated totally. So much so that the king of the Gandharvas came and surrendered to Arjuna also. He was held a captive. So Duryodhana was ashamed that we have been saved by our enemy. He was very ashamed. So when Arjuna came and reported to Yudhishthira, he was very happy. So what we understand from this pastime, this story, is that Arjuna was capable of even defeating the heavenly people, just like Gandharvas. There is another instance where Arjuna and Krishna, they are going around the Kandavaprastha forest. At that time also, actually, that's a long story, but to cut the long story short, there was a connection between Takshaka and Indra. They are friends, good friends. So Takshaka was living in the forest, in that jungle. So Agni once had in one of the sacrifices, one great king offered too much of ghee. That Agni got indigestion. When you eat too much ghee, that's why we should not eat too much ghee. So because of indigestion, he went to the celestial Ayurvedic doctor. So he was told that if you have to cure this indigestion, you have to consume a lot of herbs in that particular forest, Kandavaprastha forest. So when you consume the whole of Kandavaprastha forest herbs, then your indigestion will be finished. So Agni would go to the Kandavaprastha forest to consume. But then, because Takshaka was living there, who happened to be Indra's friend, Indra would shower rains. And he would, thwart the atoms of Agni. So in this way, poor Agni, he was always defeated. So at last Agni thought, let me go and take shelter of Arjuna, Krishna Arjuna. So actually Arjuna told, you don't worry, I will arrange it for you. I will see to it that Indra cannot thwart you from consuming the forest. And Agni asked, how are you going to stop him? Indra is the head of all the demigods. And Arjuna said, don't worry. So when Agni started consuming the forest, Arjuna went round and round the forest, and he sent the arrows in such a way that all the arrows formed a kind of big chakra over the forest. Not a drop of water could come. And the whole wheel was revolving above the top of the forest. And Indra became wild. He thought the fire is consuming. So it is said Indra, along with Varuna, came with his noose, Indra came with his thunderbolt, all of them carried their respective weapons, and they all came in a cascade, all the demigods. They were shooting weapons at Arjuna, and Arjuna was moving, and Krishna was driving the chariot. And Arjuna attacked all of them and defeated them, sent them back. Can you imagine? Of course, at that particular time, Takshaka was out of station. He was not there. Takshaka's family members were there. Some family members were there. And many animals would come out of the forest. Arjuna would not leave one of them. He would just send arrows and kill all the demons which would run out of the forest. So, it's very amazing. Although Arjuna is apparently a human being, he had the power to defeat the demigods also. Even up to the point of Lord Shiva also. At one time, Arjuna defeated Shiva and got the Pashupatastra weapon from him. So, that is the kind of great lineage in which Parikshit is coming. His grandfathers were so powerful. So Prabhupada is explaining that power in two different ways. One way to understand the power of Parikshit and his ancestors is how they could even defeat the celestials. They had celestial weapons. What to speak of the earthly kings? They are all tiny tots in front of the Pandavas. They can't stand. The Pandavas were like powerful lions. Nobody could... vicious elements could stand in front of them. If you talk about the earthly kings, there were so many earthly kings, vicious kings. They were all put together in the battle of Kurukshetra and finished. They couldn't survive. So, on the other hand, Prabhupada is talking from another angle, that there is a verse in Bhagavatam. Saratya parashada sevana sakya dautya virasana anugamana stavana pranamat Snigdeshu pandishu jagat pranatim cha vishnu bhaktim karo tirupatish charana aravinde. That verse says that Lord Krishna, he became a sarathi of the Pandavas. And he became a parashada, means he became a dut. Dut means a messenger for the Pandavas. he became a Shanti Dut. Huh? He also became a Virasana. Virasana means like when the Pandavas were sleeping in the Kurukshetra time, so Krishna wouldn't sleep. He would take his weapons and he would be going round and round, protecting them, safeguarding them, even in the night. Huh? So, Lord became protector of the Pandavas. Huh? Lord became messenger of the Pandavas. He became driver of their chariot. Huh? He became their servant. Huh? He became like their brother. So all that he is saying. So this verse was spoken by whom? By the citizens of Parikshit Maharaj. When Parikshit Maharaj was going in his chariot, the citizens stopped him and came to glorify his grandfathers. My dear Parikshit, your grandfathers are such great devotees of Krishna, that Krishna did all these things to them. And you are coming in the same lineage. How fortunate you are, you see. And Parikshit would feel great joy hearing this. So, Prabhupada is quoting many examples to show, if Krishna, who is the supreme controller amongst all controllers, everything in this world is under his clutches control. If he comes under the control of the Pandavas, like Parikshit, who is the coming the same lineage, then what cannot be under Parikshit's control? That is the logic. If Lord, there is nothing that Lord cannot do, everything is in his control. As Lord says, Madhubayat Vati Vatoyam, Suryastapati Madhubayat, Varshati Indra Dahati Agnir Mutushcharati Madhubayat. He says the sun is rising by my out of fear for me. Madhubayat Vati Vatoyam. The wind is blowing out of fear for me. And the rain showers are brought forth by Indra out of fear for me. The death is taking its toll out of fear for me. The seasons are changing out of fear for me, Krishna is saying. So, everything in this creation is orchestrated by Krishna. Orchestrated means he's just watching. He is watching and they all are doing. Why? Out of fear for him. What type of fear is that? It is not that they fear that they will be punished. It is out of fear to displease Krishna. They would not like to displease him because they know he is our loving master and we should simply obey what he says. And they are, all the whole nature is working like a beautiful orchestra. And all of them are doing their respective duties out of fear for Krishna. Now, when everything is happening so wonderfully under his control, there is nothing even equal to him. There is nothing beyond him. And such a Lord becomes controlled by his devotees. So when such a Lord is under the control of his devotee, then what can a devotee not do? That is a question here. Like here Prabhupada says, the assurances and challenges made by Maharaj Parikshit are never exaggerations of his real power. The Maharaj has said that even the denizens of heaven could not escape his stringent government if they were violators of religious principles. He was not falsely proud, for a devotee of the Lord is equally as powerful as the Lord, or sometimes more powerful by his grace. And any promise made by a devotee, though it may be ordinarily very difficult to fulfill, is properly executed by the grace of the Lord. Like one time Arjuna made a promise to a Brahmana that I will save your dying children. Actually, one Brahmana was losing one child after another child. And in those days, it is said there will never be any Akala Mrityu. Akala Mrityu means before the passing away of the father, the son will not die. Because first father should die and then the son should die. That is the standard. But in that Brahmana's case, what happened? His children were all dying one after other. First child, second child. So one day the Brahmana started cursing the king, saying that what kind of kingdom is being run. I think there is no prowess that the king has. Because if the king only had power, all the people in the kingdom should not suffer from the threefold miseries. All the people should not suffer from too much cold or too much heat. They should not suffer from pestilence or diseases. They should not suffer from the thieves or rogues. They should not suffer due to any miseries, and they should not have any akala mrityu. There should not be any such death. And I am seeing that these children are dying one after another. What is the use of the king? Let the king throw away his bow and arrow and be a coward. Like that he was shouting. And Arjuna overheard it. Arjuna was surprised. He asked the Brahmana what happened. The Brahmana told him the truth. And then Arjuna said, okay, don't worry. Now I will ensure that your child will not die. So Arjuna took his bow and arrow and he was circumambulating the maternity ward, because the mother was about to give a child. So he was going around, hey, who is that who is coming to kill this child? If Yama has the guts, let him come and kill the child. I will not leave him. So he was going round and round, but then the next child was born and he died also. Again the Brahmana screamed and cried, and he said, just see, Arjuna, you are also useless. You couldn't do anything. You claimed that you will protect my child. What is the use of your going round? It is simply a show. So then Arjuna became very angry. He said, somehow or other I will get your children back. He prayed to Shiva, all that is shown. So Krishna didn't speak a word until Arjuna sought his help. Actually, that whole pastime is to show a devotee of the Krishna is able to do miraculous things not by his own efforts, but by the mercy of Krishna. That pastime stands for that only. Because Arjuna could not save those children. Here it is said, a devotee of the Lord can do anything. He is sometimes more powerful than the Lord, it is said. Then why he couldn't save those children? Because he was praying to Shiva and he was trying on his own accord to go here, there and find out where are those children. He couldn't find out everywhere. At last, then Krishna offered to help him. Krishna said, come, let's go. They went all over the universe searching everywhere. At last, they had to cross beyond the Brahmanda, go beyond Brahmajyoti. And there they met Lord Vishnu, who was having those children. And when Mahavishnu saw that Krishna and Arjuna have come, he smiled and said, actually I wanted your darshan. That is why I brought these children here. So, a devotee becomes so powerful because devotee has Krishna. That is why a devotee becomes so powerful. Otherwise, a devotee on his own accord is not powerful. A devotee becomes a controller of Krishna by a loving devotion. So, we also find in the earlier verses how Maharaj Parikshit speaks very strong words in this, just now a few verses before. So here he says, whoever causes offenseless living beings to suffer must fear me anywhere and everywhere in the world. By curbing dishonest miscreants, one automatically benefits the offenseless. The Prabhupada is saying, the devotees of the Lord are by nature peaceful and offenseless. And therefore it is a prime duty of the state to arrange to convert everyone to become a devotee of the Lord. Thus automatically there will be peaceful, offenseless citizens. Then the only duty of the king will be to curb the dishonest miscreants. That will bring peace and harmony. And then Parikshit is saying, an upstart living being who commits offenses by torturing those who are offenseless shall be directly uprooted by me, even though he be a denizen of heaven with armor and decorations and everything. The supreme duty of the ruling king is to give all protection to law-abiding persons and to chastise those who stray from the ordinances of the scriptures in ordinary times when there is no emergency. So, Prabhupada explains how a king or a Vaishnava like Parikshit is certainly soft-hearted and kind towards all living beings. At the same time, he does not compromise on offering the due punishment for those who stray from the religious principles. Like it is said, Vajradapi Kathoram, Kusumadapi Komalam. It is said, as soft as a rose and as hard as a thunderbolt. You see, both these sides, in all these great kings, you will find this kind of behavior, because at the appropriate time, the appropriate kind of justice should be awarded to everyone. Like sometimes you find a high court judge is offering a gift to a person, and on the other hand he is offering a death sentence to another person. Because you should be prepared for both. His understanding of justice should be so broad, so vast, he has to award the right kind of justice to the right kind of people. In the life of devotees, if it's Srila Prabhupada, for example, when it comes to justice, offering justice in the life of devotees, Prabhupada says that his father Gaur Mohande, he was always very lenient. My father was very lenient and very loving and affectionate. He wouldn't so easily punish me when I was a small boy. Although I would commit some small mistakes, he would bear with me. And it is true with Prabhupada also. Prabhupada was very lenient with devotees in the early days. Sometimes Prabhupada would see that the devotees would... Actually, Prabhupada had made a rule that devotees should not eat anything outside. Devotees should eat only prasad. That is the austerity for a devotee. But some devotees could not stop eating outside. On one hand, they would not want to displease Prabhupada. On the other hand, they could not avoid eating also either. So they would attend the whole morning program. And some of them had just given up their material lives and come into temple. So they would want to go out and take a puff of smoke, cigarette, in intervals. Or some of them would want to take a little bit of marijuana or something like that, which they had just given up. Some of them had given up and come, some of them had kept somewhere. They had not given up completely. So sometimes they would go to the donut shop which was near the temple, and they would be eating some ice creams there. And Prabhupada would be searching, where are the devotees? He would come with a stick searching. And when Prabhupada would be looking into the shop, they would put their heads below the table. They'd be hiding. So Prabhupada saw that they are struggling, but Prabhupada wanted them to practice. So he was sometimes, he would just admonish slightly and leave it. But as Prabhupada says, Lalayat Panchavarshani, he was a bit lenient in the early days. Even Mother Yashoda, you can see, Mother Yashoda is quite lenient in dealing with Krishna. Like Prabhupada said, you should follow the Yashoda technique. Yashoda technique is show the stick but don't beat. With Gurukul children. You can show the stick so children will be afraid. So in many homes, probably a decade ago or two decades ago, many parents used to have rulers. Long rulers. Parents wouldn't beat them, but they would show them. If you see the ruler, if they're taking out the ruler, that means the matter is serious. Understand, isn't it? So Yashodamayi would show the stick, but sometimes when Yashodamayi became heavy, you will see when Yashoda was once dealing with Krishna, she saw she admonished Krishna very strongly. She called him, I'm hearing report that Balram and other boys are all saying that you ate mud. When she felt it is going to threaten his good health, then she caught him. And then Krishna was just waving the head and saying, no, 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 they are all telling lies. She said, okay, if they are telling lies, you prove yourself. Open your mouth. She demanded. She behaved a little strongly fine. Like you find also, once Jagannath Mishra was very strongly scolding Nimai Pandit. He has never scolded him so strongly. One day he admonished him so strongly. And then when he went to sleep, the night he got a dream. A Brahmana appeared in his dream. And said, my dear Jagannath Mishra, don't you know your son is none other than Lord Narayana himself? Is it proper for you to admonish the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full in all opulences, and to admonish him like ordinary child? Then Jagannath Mishra was arguing in the dream itself. He was arguing, what can I do? After all, he is my son. If the father doesn't correct the son and properly educate him, then how will the son grow up properly? So as long as he is my son, I am going to admonish him. So, as a father, as a spiritual master, as a king, all the people taking up the roles of such leadership, they have the responsibility of admonishing the dependents. It is a part of the process. But Prabhupada did not assume his authoritative position when they were very young. And Prabhupada did not exert his authority very strongly, very strictly, when they were very young. But as they grew up, they saw another facet of Prabhupada, which they had never seen before. And Prabhupada started becoming extremely strict in dealing with them, and severe chastisements they would get. Sometimes Prabhupada would use criticism and sarcasm as tools to correct his disciples. So Harishaya Prabhu writes, if you read the book Transcendental Diary, three phases of Prabhupada's anger, three stages. When Prabhupada would be angry, in the initial stages Prabhupada would use sarcasm. For example, Burijan Prabhu says, a particular example from his life, he says that once when Prabhupada was coming to Hong Kong, so Prabhupada came to Hong Kong. In those days, the Hong Kong days were not very pleasant days because the preaching wasn't so good. And Prabhupada was received in the airport by Burijan Prabhu and his wife, and Sasudas Maharaj was driving the car, and Burijan Prabhu, his wife, was sitting behind Prabhupada was also sitting with them. And then Prabhupada was asking Bhujanpur's wife about how your parents are in Australia. For about 2-3 minutes, Prabhupada was talking light talks. After that, Prabhupada asked the question, what is your morning program? He asked. And then Bhujanpur was saying, Prabhupada, actually nowadays not many guests are coming in the morning. Very few guests are coming. Prabhupada said, I am not asking about the guests, I am asking about your program. What's your morning program? He asked. And then immediately, Jagadani Mataji closed the window between the driver. Driver was Satsukadas Maharaj. And this side, because now this is like open heart surgery. It's going to take place. She closed that window. And then Prabhupada asked, whose disciple are you? Prabhupada asked. Prabhupada, I'm your disciple, Prabhupada. You know, he said, is your temple in ISKCON? Prabhupada asked. Yes, Prabhupada, ours is ISKCON temple only. He said. And then these two questions pierced very deeply into his heart. Whose disciple am I? I'm Prabhupada's disciple. Who said I'm not Prabhupada's disciple? I am also ISKCON follower only. So Prabhupada was like, Prabhupada went on very heavy. About the importance of morning program, how we should never compromise. So, Prabhupada, in the early stage, Prabhupada used to be sarcastic. Or sometimes Prabhupada would criticize. And when Prabhupada, the anger would become sometimes more intense, his lips would quiver. And then when Prabhupada was sometimes extremely disappointed with someone, then Prabhupada would not talk at all. He would just keep silent. He would neglect them. Ignore them. Not pay attention to them. That is actually if somebody has any sensitivity, that is the greatest pain that one can face. Like for example, once when there was an, what is his name? Rai Ram Prabhu, I think. Rameshwar Prabhu, I think. So he was in charge of BTG. Once Prabhupada was sitting in his quarters and he went to show one of the Bhakti Godhead magazines. So when he went and showed, Prabhupada saw it. So Prabhupada didn't like the picture of Krishna. He said, Krishna is not beautiful in this. You have not put a proper picture. This is going to so many thousands of people. Why don't you choose an appropriate picture? And then Prabhupada saw that there were some advertisements. Prabhupada was very unhappy. He said, in our Bhakti Godhead magazines, there should be no advertisement. This is one magazine you will find absolutely no advertisements of any companies. Since Prabhupada's time, even today, up to this day, they never would put advertisement. So Prabhupada was calling him for that. And surprisingly enough, Rameshwar Swami, he was talking back. He was arguing back. And there was a spiral staircase which was leading to the Prabhupada's room. And in the staircase, Gargarishi Prabhu was standing. And he was actually very attentive and apparently relishing also the interaction that is going on inside. So Bhujan Prabhu says when he also climbed up in the staircase, he was also trying to hear what was going on. So, and Prabhupada was observing that Rameshwar is talking back, arguing. And Prabhupada said, I am trying to correct you. If you are going to argue back, then how can I help you? Prabhupada was asking. And Gargarishi turned to Bhujan Prabhu and said, this is only for big people. We hold on. You are not supposed to be hearing this. He said. So, you can see, Adho Guru Pada Ashray, Saddharma Pritcha, all those principles are said, Vishrambena Guru Seva. The very first principle taught in religion is to learn the art of submissively dealing with the spiritual master. Actually, spiritual master, he is an agent of Krishna's desire. He is simply working to please the desire of Krishna only. And he has no agenda. He has no personal agenda. He is not a person who is self-promoting himself. If a guru becomes pleased, if a guru becomes angry, both are displays of Krishna's emotion only, which is coming through the spiritual master. So, one who protests against the instruction of the spiritual master, he becomes afflicted by lust and doubt. And that's what happened to Rameshwar Swami subsequently. One becomes agitated by lust and doubt and he fell down from spiritual life subsequently. So this is one lesson we learn that great disciples of Prabhupada understood that Prabhupada's anger has no malice associated with it. There is no vengeance. Prabhupada absolutely had no vengeance, and he would never remember for the second time. Prabhupada never maintained any grudges. For example, in Calcutta one time, Prabhupada had to go to the airport. So some new car was brought, purchased in the temple. So the devotees were saying, Prabhupada, we will take you in this car to the airport, and we have arranged a new driver also. And the driver, when he got the new car, probably he had a desire to, you know, have a ride and purchase something. So he went away to purchase something. And he went a little long distance, so he couldn't come back because traffic was very heavy. So he's supposed to come back and then pick up Prabhupada and go to the airport. But the car couldn't come, and Prabhupada was very angry. He said, rascal, he said, stubborn rascal. Prabhupada scolded. Just see, he is just, he wants to enjoy his own sense gratification program. That he didn't come in time. So the devotees were very afraid. And then they arranged another car. And then that car took Prabhupada to the airport. And Prabhupada later on came to same Calcutta again and again. But he never even mentioned it ever again. He forgot it once and for all. He never remembered it. Because Prabhupada was never vengeful. Or he was... he would never remember the old mistakes and keep quoting it again and again. Finding fault with them. He would never do that. Because this kind of anger was very superficial. In the same manner, that anger that Prabhupada, which he shows, which he showed towards Rameshwara or anyone, it was always purposeful. It was not without a meaning. It was not without without connection to service to Krishna. It was never like that. So, it's very... disciples of Prabhupada understood that on one hand they were afraid, on the other hand they loved him. He controlled them through his love. And he could accomplish some of the most difficult things. That's why Bhajan was writing that if you see, Prabhupada has done great miracles all over the world before even he left the planet. But those things were possible not simply because Prabhupada was always loving, always pampering his disciples. He says that there were times when disciples saw the fiery temper of Prabhupada with the desire to admonish them and bring them to the right path. If there was loss of Krishna's money, if there was loss of Krishna's energy, if the disciples were going astray, if the disciples were becoming followers of bogus paths, and if the disciples were quarreling amongst themselves, or if the disciples were becoming too attached to wealth and opulences that are meant for Krishna's service, if the disciples are failing to follow his instructions, if the disciples are compromising on the standards, spiritual standards, in all these occasions Prabhupada never was compromising. It's not that he just tolerated. Like you will see, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he banished Haridas Thakur once and for all. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers loved him more than their life itself. For them, he was their very life. If it was not for him, they wouldn't even live. They loved him so much. You read the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Bengal, as Nimaya Pandit. His followers, for them, he was their very life itself. And every day, when they would rise in the morning, till they sleep in the night, all day, they would be simply surrounding him, participating in his pastimes. Mahaprabhu would be singing, he would be dancing, he would be visiting Jagannath Temple. He would be talking about Krishna, singing about Krishna, chanting Krishna's names. Just they were participating in it. They had no life separate from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And to be banished from his association was worse than suicide also for the large devotees. Suicide wouldn't be as painful as being bereft of the association of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu did that to Haridas Thakur. But Prabhupada never did that to anyone. Prabhupada scolded, Prabhupada chastised, and afterwards Prabhupada would be very warm. And again he would know if somebody would come back to track, Prabhupada would again appreciate them and go on. He never banished anyone as Lord Chaitanya banished. So, it should be understood that in Vaishnava circles, it's not that we say Trinada Pishana Nichana Tarup Sakshana, so you are humble all the time, and there is no correction. So you will find not only Prabhupada, all the Acharyas, you know, down the line you will see, beginning from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, you can see, you know, whether it is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati or Srila Prabhupada or the Vartamana Acharya, the current Acharyas, you will never find that they have been always mild with everyone at all the time, and there was no correction and there was no chastisement. They were always personification of sweetness. And even in Krishna Lila, many times you find, even in the spiritual world, Radharani becoming angry with Krishna, you find, and rejecting Krishna for some time, and then again they are united. Sometimes you see Krishna becoming angry, Balaram becoming angry, you see that. So in the spiritual world is a world of emotions. It is not like a senseless world, or a world of, like Jayadeva Swami said, no senses, nonsense. It's not like that. It is a world full of senses. So when there are spiritual senses, there is spiritual mind, there is spiritual intelligence, there are spiritual emotions, there are spiritual exchanges. In a Satyabhama and Rukmini, in their dealing, Satyabhama becomes angry, she wants a Parijata flower, you find that. So spiritual world is a world of emotions, there are ups and downs, and it is a part of the Leela, part of the loving exchanges between Lord and His devotees, which actually enhances the mood of the spiritual world. If one were to think, like, you know, somebody was telling, once one group of devotees were talking to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, if only the whole world becomes Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious, there will be no anger, there will be no... Prabhupada said, wait a minute, what did you say? Prabhupada, you know, there will be always peace, there will be no anger. Prabhupada said, what a fool he is, you see. Prabhupada said, whole Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Lord Krishna to Arjuna to incite the anger in Arjuna, so that he will fight the battle. And he is saying that by becoming Krishna conscious, there will be no anger. Prabhupada was saying. So that is why some great politicians and personalities, they carry a Bhagavad Gita in hand and they say Bhagavad Gita teaches non-violence. And you see the corpus of Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna Arjuna in the chariot, you know, he is going for the war. And he is saying it preaches non-violence. It is true that non-violence, ahimsa, is one of the principles of religion. We don't want to kill the cows, kill the goats, kill the chicken. We have to be non-violent. We want to cause the least pain to all the living creatures. There are sages who will eat only the fruits that drop from the trees. They will not even pluck the fruits. They will not even pluck the vegetables. So we want to cause the least harm. At the same time, for the purpose of dharma, and for destroying adharma, the scriptures also ordain that there has to be violence. Like for example, Parikshit Maharaj is here about to punish Kali, who is creating such a havoc in the world. Because all the living entities are children of the Lord, and they all are supposed to be in one family, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, Vasudeva Kutumbakam. It's one family. All the human beings, all the birds, the bees, the reptiles, the aquatics, the insects, they all have their food. They should be allowed to eat their food. They should be allowed to live in their residences, wherever they are living. They should be allowed their quota and live happily. But certain living entities become vicious and they want to take in more than their quota. They try to usurp the property of other living beings. They create harm for the other living beings. They create nuisance for other living beings. So that has to be curbed. And if that has to be curbed, violence is needed. That's why here you find Parikshit Maharaj is telling religion, whoever it is, even if it is, like Indra is coming to steal the horse from Prithu Maharaj's sacrifice, should he be punished or not? Is the question. Now, you know, Vijita Ashwa. Ashwa means the horse. Vijita means one who conquered. Vijita Ashwa means one who brought the horse back. That's the meaning of Vijita Ashwa. He is the Ajita, who is the son of Prithu Maharaj. So now, Prithu Maharaj is saying that the sacrificial horse has been stolen away by Indra. Now he's telling his son, hey, better go, get the horse back. What is he doing? That fellow, see that Indra is going there. Kill him and get the horse back. So now Ajita is going, But then Indra transforms himself into a so-called mendicant, kapalika. He's carrying a kapalika danda in the hand, and he's wearing the dress of a mendicant. So this Ajita is fearing, how can I punish him? See, this kind of sentimentalism is there in India even today. The same mentality. If somebody, there are so many bogus sadhus who claim to be God in India. Prabhupada says in India, every day one God is manufactured in the factory of India. And as soon as a sadhu wears a sadhu's dress, and if he claims that I am God, I can produce some ashes, I can produce some gold, I can produce some silver, and I am Bhagavan. And if you tell the people, hey, he is a fool, he is claiming to be Bhagavan, they will say, hey, no, 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 kuch bura ho jayega, some bad will happen, don't tell him anything. If he says he is God, let him say, you know, we will just, you know, worship him, take some basma, apply it and go, so that, you know, our business will be going on. Let us not say anything bad about anyone. This is sentimentalism. People have no common sense. They don't have the guts to challenge somebody who claims to be God. Where are your six opulences? Are you all beautiful? Look at your face. Are you all strong? Are you all knowledgeable? So they don't have the guts to ask. Same way, Ajita was also fearful. As soon as he saw the saffron dress of Indra, he thought maybe he is some sannyasi and he is carrying the horse, how can I hurt him? So he was feeling a little uneasy to do that. But then behind him, Vasishtha was shouting, kill him! Don't leave him! Don't spare him! Kill him! Then with great hesitation, he took the bow and arrow. It was about to hit and Indra saw him, he is about to kill me. He dropped the horse and ran away. After that, then he brought the horse back. So, here is an example of how without violence, in this world, it is not possible to bring about law and order. It's not possible. Whether it be the modern times or whether it be ancient times. That is why there is law and order, there is a system of punishment that is supposed to be offered to the people. It is there since the Vedic times. It's not that sometimes you say in the Vedic times everything was wonderful. It's not that there were no thieves, there were no rogues, and there were no criminals. But the people were minority, criminals were minority, because the kings wouldn't leave any room for such activities. As soon as there would be some atrocity, immediate action. And the kings were very powerful. Like Prabhupada says, the kings knew that only when one becomes a devotee of the Lord, one will not encroach upon others' property. One will be satisfied with what Krishna has given. Only when one becomes a devotee, one will not hurt other living entities. One will not harm other living entities. So one will lead a very peaceful life. So knowing this fact, the kings would try to convert all the masses into devotees of Krishna. And those who don't become devotees, but create trouble, for them the kings would have a system of punishment. There was law and order. Now in the modern times what has happened? The situation has become reversed. The devotees are minority. And the venomous, vicious elements are in majority. That has become the majority. So because of this, there is no law and order. First of all, the people who are supposed to be offering the law and order to the people, they themselves are corrupt. Like I was telling you, the police force, the military, the politicians, the economic lords, the heads of the society, the teachers. I heard in South India there is a school. I came to know when I had gone to South. I heard that they are putting cinema music in the school. Instead of, they have a cultural meeting every week for about 2 to 3 hours. You know, children come, I think Saturday evening or something. I mean, Saturday afternoon. One period is allotted for cultural. So when we were studying in the school, 3 hours we used to have a cultural meeting. What we would do? The whole school would assemble. There'll be some 800 children. All sitting. And then they would be singing many songs. You know. Of course, they would sing many demigod songs also. Amba Parameshwari, Akilandeshwari. They would sing Durga song. They would sing Jai Ganesh. And they would sing Shiva. They would sing on Krishna. They would sing on Vishnu, Ram. So there would be bhajans. And there will be practically 40-50 instruments will be there. All peculiar instruments. You know that with pearl, different kinds of instruments. So all of us would pick up different instruments and we'd be playing also. Children would be playing. And some children would be dancing also. So this bhajan should go on for 2-3 hours and it's so soothing to the mind. They would teach us shlokas, shloka recitation and all that, Bhagavad Gita shloka recitation. Sometimes they would tell some moral stories also. That's where we learned about Prahlad, Dhruva and all that. But now the same period, what's happening? I came to know when I went to South, they have got rock music, they have got cinema music. I heard that when this music was going on, one teacher started dancing. And the principal was taking photograph. So one of the child came and told me, you know, in our school the teacher is dancing and principal is taking photo. So when I saw this, I am thinking, what kind of school is this school? And he's saying all the teachers are wearing all kinds of cosmetics. All kinds of cosmetics, they are all coming like cinema actresses. And the teachers are coming like cinema heroes. And they are having loving affairs in the school. Then what will the children learn? Children are going to school to learn these useless things. And these are leaders of today. And these are the people who are training the children in the school. So they will be producing Hiranyakashipus and Ravanas and Hiranyakshas in the school. And see that. So in the Dadsa Prabhupada, with great strenuous effort, he made the society of devotees, ISKCON devotees. We have to know, even in the society of devotees, after Prabhupada has made it, it's not that this society is 100-101% all perfect. The spiritual world is a perfect place, but we are living in the material world. So when you try to administer spirituality in the material world, some unwanted elements will enter the society, which has to be treated. Similarly, even if we are devotees, we are not unwanted elements, we are devotees. But even while trying to become devotee, there are some unwanted elements in our heart which require treatment. And that treatment which is to be given, that will be made through corrections, admonishments, punishments, disciplinary action. And all this is done with the good intention of bringing about purity and spiritual advancement for the individual and for the collective progress of our society. Only then our society can become a spotless society. Srila Prabhupada used to say, just look at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was a spotless personality. And we should become exactly like him. Prabhupada would say, live like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Become a devotee like him. And to the degree we are not following in Lord Chaitanya's footsteps very properly, strictly, we should be prepared for admonishments, chastisements, as Srila Prabhupada gave his disciples. And that is all done for the ultimate good cause of purifying our consciousness. Because generally one of the notions that people have is a pure devotee means they are free from anger. This kind of one notion is there amongst all the people, especially religious people. People think, I have seen many people sometimes, we had gone to this Anantapur temple opening, it gone. So on the way back we were discussing with devotees, what are your realizations? So one devotee was telling, Prabhuji, the president of this temple, he has no tension. Tension hai lete hai, Prabhuji. He doesn't take, he is so very happy, always smiling. He was doing chamar for the deities. He was receiving everyone with a very happy smile. He was telling. So he said, Prabhuji, sadhu means you have to be like this, Prabhuji. One devotee was telling. So actually, all of us, when you don't know a person very closely, from a distance they are always sweet. anybody in this world. But when we are very nearby, then everyone has a circle like Srila Prabhupada. For example, there are people who hanker for Prabhupada's association. There are people who fear Prabhupada's association. One time when Prabhupada was in angry mood in Vrindavan, Yamuna Mataji saw that Vrindavan temple was not completed, Prabhupada was in angry mood. So she was like sort of escaping. Actually, she used to cook for Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked, where is Yamuna? She has never come to report about the activities and everything. And then later on he called for her and she was at a distance trying to almost escape. And Prabhupada said, like Balram invited Yamuna. With a plow I will, if you don't come I will call you. Prabhupada said. For saying like that. So people think like that, but it's not that a devotee does not have any tension. If a devotee doesn't have any tension, that means probably he is very satisfied in his own sense gratification. Because Yashodamayi, Yeah, yeah, Yashoda Mayi, if you see, she has so much tension. Huh? She has so much anxiety. Krishna, you know, the monkey should not scratch Krishna's thighs. Huh? The monkeys, the cows should not put their hooves on Krishna's thighs. Huh? And, you know, Krishna should not touch fire. Huh? He should not go out alone. He'll become frightened. Huh? But the animals, actually, nobody is going to harm Krishna at all in Vrindavan. But that's a spiritual anxiety she has. So Prabhupada explains how it is important for devotees to have spiritual anxiety. If you don't have spiritual anxiety, something is wrong. Actually, Mayavadis are very satisfied because they have no spiritual work to do, because they don't know what is spiritual variety. So they have no spiritual work to do. They apparently appear to be satisfied. Their satisfaction is exactly like the satisfaction of a crane who is standing in the waters of the river with his head down, not doing anything silently. He's just watching like this. Suddenly when a fish comes, thak, it catches. He'll find. So where is his stability gone? Where is his, you know, sita prajna tendency gone? He's not a sita prajna. It's a bogus silence. So, and then you find that, you know, he becomes less, like Vishwamitra was performing meditation and he became lusty again. So in Vaishnava circle, a devotee doesn't try to negate the emotions, nullify the emotions, rather devotee tries to utilize all the emotions positively in Krishna's service. Kama Krishna Karmarpane, Krodha Bhakta Dveshi Jane, Loba Sadhu Sange Harikata, Moha Ishtalabha Vine, and then Mother Krishna Guna Gane. So beautifully it's explained by the Acharyas. Kama Krishna Karmarpane. If you have passion and vigor in your body, use it all in Krishna's service. Dovetail it in Krishna's service. If any of you feel I am too lusty in my heart, then do vigorous service for Krishna. Do cleaning, do washing, do stirring sweet rice in the kitchen. Lift big burthens and all your lust will be drained out in Krishna's service. Kama Krishna Karmarpane. Krodha Bhakta Dveshi Jane. Those who are Bhakta Dveshis, one should show anger towards them. Like Lord Chaitanya showed anger towards Jagaya Madai. And Loba Sadhu Sanghe Harikata. You can have greed, but greed for Sadhu Sangha and hearing Harikata. You can have greed for that. Moha Ishtalabha Vine. Ishtalabha Vine. So you should have that. Ishtalabhavani means one should have hankering. Like in this world, we have a moha or illusion or hankering for what? The perishable things of this world. But our Ishtalabha is Krishna Prem. For that, one should have hankering. And Mother Krishna Guna Gane. If you want to be mad or intoxicated, become intoxicated in the Harinam Sankirtan. Throw your hands up in the air and chant and dance like a madman. So that is very much welcomeable. In this way, all our emotions should be made positive. And when we see Srila Prabhupada exhibiting his anger and correcting the disciples to bring them to the right path, that doesn't give us a license that we imitate Srila Prabhupada to become angry like him and just show direction towards Prabhupada. Prabhupada is angry, so I am also angry. But Prabhupada, you will always find in Prabhupada's behavior, he did not just discipline without love. It was discipline with love. That is most important. Because taking disciplinary actions alone without love will lead to hard-heartedness. It will lead to harshness and hard-heartedness, and there is no mellow there. There is no substance there. But where there is a platform of love and there is a disciplinary action taken over that, then that is supposed to be well taken. Of course, some people understood Prabhupada and they took it in the right spirit and they grew to great heights. Some people misunderstood Prabhupada and they left him and they went down. And both will happen. But without such correction, to tread the platform of purity is not very easy. Like the very first time Srila Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and offered obeisances to him. And he stood up and immediately he gave him a lifetime instruction. Why don't you preach this in English language to the Western people and all that? And Prabhupada argued back. Of course, Prabhupada was totally new. Prabhupada says, first time when he met Bhaksan Sarasthi, Bhaksan Sarasthi told him, you sit here, you know, in the same elevated seat. Prabhupada also sat there. He says, Prabhupada said, I don't know that I'm not supposed to sit there. He told me, so I also sat. He says, an elevated seat. So, and when he told me, then I argue back, then he says, my Guru Maharaj defeated me. Huh? He defeated me. He said, it is useless to work for the freedom struggle at this time. Why? Because Krishna consciousness is the emergency that cannot wait. Today British are ruling us, before this Mughals are ruling, tomorrow Germans may be ruling, then French may be ruling, Chinese may be ruling. That situation will keep changing. But Krishna consciousness cannot wait. That should be preached at all times. And it should be immediately taken up seriously. So he spoke with full conviction. And Prabhupada was... sometimes we feel, if a new boy is brought, you know, we should not speak very strongly, he'll go away. We say like that. But you often find those who hear a strong instruction, they only become very powerful devotees. Prabhupada heard that one instruction and then he went back with a very memorable event. He said, Lord Chaitanya's message is in the right hands. He was very happy. He felt a great joy because he's speaking the truth. He's standing for the truth. He's speaking the truth. And Prabhupada says, at that time I accepted him in my heart as my spiritual master. You can see that. So when the violence and non-violence, the external sense have their place, in the same way, speaking strongly or dealing sensitively, they also have their place. That you understand when you read these verses. So the essential point here is, that the Lord's devotee is as powerful as the Lord or sometimes more powerful than the Lord. Like Lord Chaitanya preached the message all over India, but Prabhupada preached the message of Chaitanya all over the world. Sometimes the devotee is more powerful than the Lord by the mercy of the Lord, by the grace of the Lord, he says here. So a devotee, when a devotee gives assurance or a blessing or a promise or a prayer or guidance, it should be taken as seriously as if it is coming from the mouth of the Lord. At the point. Like sometimes you tell a devotee, Prabhuji, can you please pray for me? And then that devotee also says, I'll pray for you. Then you think, okay, whether he prays or not, what difference it makes? You know, he's a chota, he's a small guy, you know. Then you will not benefit from that prayer. Actually, to understand the meaning of requesting someone to pray, we need some depth in Krishna conscious life, in Vaishnava life. Prayers, blessings, guidance, mercy, these are all very deep words. One should understand. Actually, they all have their place. And if a person is requesting with a sincere heart, and if a person is bestowing with a sincere heart, and if Lord is there in between them, surely one will get empowerment. It is certainly possible. So here the purport says that one should not take these things cheaply. Because, you know, somebody may think if Lord gives a promise, and devotee gives promise, that's a big difference. Prabhupada says there is no big difference. Because the devotee is even controlling the Lord. And just as Lord has everything in his control, devotee also has everything in his control by the mercy of the Lord. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.